Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Tola Talks with Rich Tola, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, it's Rich Tola, and thanks for tuning in to my East Coast Talk for a 21st Century World. We got a great show today, another great show today. I have a special guest in the studio, good friend of mine, Chris Duquet. We're going to be talking about lucid dreaming. You'll hear all about that from Chris, as well as he's giving us a little musical treat. Great musician here, actually played with him once, so we're going to have him do a song for us as well. Love music, as you know. We did a great one last week with Eric Masick, so we got Chris today. We'll check it out. We also have Top 10 Tuesdays, right? Every Tuesday we do the Top 10. Today I'm going to be doing our Top 10, well, mine, Top 10 Albums of All Time. Well, before I turn 30. We'll get into that because, hey, there's too many years to do them all. And I want to thank, from yesterday, our celebrity beauty guru and hairstylist, John Francis. Hey, thanks so much, John Francis. Great interview yesterday. Check it out, folks, on the latalkradio.com website, /tola.php for my personal homepage. And I want to give a shout-out to my peeps in Miami. You know who you are, Curtis, Diane, my buddy Greg. So, hey, you guys, hope you're having some fun down there. I'm sure it's hot. It's nice and hot here. The sun finally came back, folks. A little cloudy, rainy yesterday. We definitely could have used the rain. But another beautiful, glorious day here in Los Angeles. So here we go. Let's get started. You know, we like to go around the globe for the latest news, strange but true. For our first story, check this out. This takes place in Holland. It's Arnhem, Holland? I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, folks. This is a 13-year-old boy, Pepchen Bruins, who is devastated by the loss of his pet rat called Ratjato, who died of cancer, right? Now, check it out. He had him stuffed and turned into a flying rodent. So it's the flying rat story. I mean, who does that? But this kid was pretty distraught, so these inventors, Arjen Beltman and Bart Jensen, came to the rescue. They stuffed the rat and attached radio-controlled propellers to it so it could fly. I mean, I don't know about you, but if you saw a flying rat coming at you, the world's first airborne rat with propellers, pretty wild stuff. I don't know. I remember back in the day, we used to have those little airplanes that you controlled, and we'd kind of dive them into the little lake there. But these inventors, check it out. Their previous work included a flying cat, ouch, and they also made a flying ostrich. I don't know how the hell they did that. And they're working on a flying shark. I don't know, guys. What next? A flying taxidermist? Maybe that's not so good. Anyway, here we go. Number two, we're calling this the Speedy Backpack. Now, check this out. This is kind of interesting. Went and watched the video. It's a 90-second video if you want to check it out. It's the world's first backpack electric vehicle. It could travel at speeds up to 15 miles an hour, and it could charge your smartphone. I mean, there's people coming up with everything these days, right? MovePacks, the name of the company, they're offering an exciting and convenient way of traveling around the city. I mean, hey, I wish I had one of these when I lived in New York City, right? It's eco-friendly, and it combines portability with mobility. Now, check it out. These guys, all right, they've been for 2 years now. They're trying to raise $100,000 on Kickstarter. They got 108 people that pledged close to $40,000. They got 30 more days to go. I'm not sure if I'm going to be pledging any money to these guys, but they say it's great for beginners. It's low to the ground, has a low sense of gravity. It's easy to charge. You just plug it into an outlet. It's 17 pounds. So, yeah, you get a little workout carrying this thing around. And it's got a two-hour charge. I mean, what it looks like to me, oh, by the way, they said there's varying benefits of this unique vehicle. It's kind of like a skateboard. It's sort of like a skateboard that sort of just slides right into this backpack. It's kind of interesting. It's a normal backpack, looks like a normal backpack, and then it turns into this sort of like skateboard thing on wheels. I don't know. Check it out. It's kind of interesting. All right, number three. Blame your brain is what we're calling this one because, hey, did you know this? And let me ask you a question. Is your brain making you fat? It's a good question because researchers, yeah, no bullshit. U.S. researchers found that obese people tended to have greater dopamine. We know what that is. That's the pleasure chemical, right? Dopamine activity in the region of the brain that controls habit. And they have less activity in the region that controls reward. Okay, what does this mean? Let's translate that. It says that obese people ate out of habit and found eating less rewarding than leaner people. All right. Now, here's a study. They only did 43 men and women. So I wouldn't say that's a huge sample, right? 43 is kind of small with varying amounts of body fat. It's done by the National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Diseases. Well, that's a mouthful. Quote, here's what they say. Eating out of habit rather than making conscious choices could be detrimental for maintaining a healthy weight. You think? I mean, that's what they're saying. They're saying obese people, if they go to the movie theater and they smell popcorn, there's a stronger pull for them than it is for someone's leaner. Well, guess what, folks? I did a Get Your Shit Together podcast. You know, I have 30 of these on my website, richtola.com. Number 13 is called Point of No Return. It's all about obesity. We talked about this in previous shows where the obesity rate in 20 states, it's close to 35%. I mean, it's really kind of, we got to get this under control. Mostly, for one, for respecting yourself. For two, for leading by example for your children. I mean, people, you got to get your shit together. And I'm not saying this in a bad way. I mean, anybody who wants to lose some pounds, anybody can do it. You just have to be diligent with yourself. You got to postpone. It's like you got to postpone the immediate gratification for the future. And that's what most people cannot do. I will say that. Most people have a problem saying, hey, I want to suffer today for what's good for me tomorrow. It's like anything. Most people could do it in business, right? You want to be successful. You got to put your time in. You got to grind it out. John Francis talked about that yesterday. He said, you can't be working 6 hours a day. You want to be successful, you got to put the time in. But that means you got to make sacrifices today. So people, if you're out there, you want to lose some weight, anybody can do it. Now's the time to do it before we come into the holiday season. So please, go check this out. It's number 13, Point of No Return. Pretty cool one. I got a cool story there, too. And let's move right into, speaking of Get Your Shit Together, let's the Get Your Shit Together Award. You know how we do this every day. We give out an award to someone who's got to get their shit together in some area of their life, no doubt. And this guy, this jackass from Des Moines, Iowa, Joshua Charles Stahl, 21-year-old kid, I will say, he sicked the dog on Kanan Pierce, a 24-year-old, during an altercation. Now, this was a pit bull, okay? One of the, you know, these pit bulls, forget about it. You get attacked by one of them. Other than that, maybe a Doberman Pinscher, but forget about that. This guy pulls over his car thinking that Pierce had thrown something. First of all, he's intoxicated, he's loaded, he's hurling racial slurs, the N-word, and he orders the dog, Ryder's the name of the dog, to attack, okay? The good news is the cops get him, he's charged with assault and violation of individual rights, which is hate crimes, people, and for violating his probation. So, hey, Mr. 21-year-old jackass, you got to get your shit together, okay? The good news with this Kanan Pierce, the guy who had his arms savagely abused by this pit bull, the bites all over the place, he doesn't blame the dog. Right? And this guy, 21-year-old Stahl, he's held on $6,000 bail. The dog's in quarantine. But really what's happening here, people, hate crimes, gang beatings, domestic violence, it's all bad. You got to get your shit together. You got to respect yourself and respect others. We talked about that in the yoga episode with the gals from the South Bay, right? With the sutras. It's about respect, people. You can't be abusing others in society, hate crimes. This is absurd. I mean, to me, $6,000 bail, I don't know. The whole system we have here, that's not a lot of money. Why don't you make it $100,000 bail so the kid's got to stay in jail? I mean, these people got to learn. They got to learn a lesson. They got to set examples for society. And by the way, here's some good news. I mean, I saw the news today. Yesterday, we gave out the award to the NFL. Remember the NFL had gave Ray Rice, the football player, he gave him a 2-month suspension for the domestic violence incident. Well, they suspended him indefinitely, and the Ravens, they released him. So I guess there's a good ending to that story. Maybe Mr. Rice will, get it together here and act a little more respectful and not be punching people, women especially, knocking them out in an elevator and dragging them off. I mean, I watched the video of that yesterday, and the good news is the NFL didn't see the video. They said they just saw videos. They responded to it. Think that's good. I know Seth Rogen had some comments about it. So good for those. You know, that kind of happy ending there. So let's get into this. This one here, I mean, this is a kind of exciting one. My top 10 albums of all time before I turn 30. I want to say that because, hey, folks, you know, I'm 51 years old. Like to think I'm a lot younger, no doubt. But there's like a different, the generation's changed. And I kind of got more into, we'll talk about this. When I hit 30, that's when I moved to New York City. And hip-hop was starting to hit. I love hip-hop. But I also like all sorts of music. Got into country, classical. You know, I kind of expanded. You know, New York was an interesting place and all sorts of new albums. But then, you know, at the late 90s with the Napster and the downloading. So albums kind of became obsolete. But these albums, all of these albums I have in vinyl. Well, maybe a couple of them in CD in the 90s, but no doubt. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to have some fun with this. These are my choices, people. So maybe you have some different opinion, but I'm going to go in chronological order because I don't want to rank them 1 to 10 because, hey, if I was stranded on a desert island, I'd like all 10 of these. All 10 of these albums. I'm going to tell you how old I was when it came out. Here we go. Number one, I was 8 years old, okay? Jackson 5's Greatest Hits. Who remembers that album from 1971? Michael Jackson was 11 years old. Now, here I am, an 8-year-old boy. Now, by the way, I grew up, my mother was on American Bandstand. She was an amazing dancer. I grew up with Diana Ross, Martha and the Vandellas, Bobby Darin, and all these types of folks I was listening to young, my younger years. And then Michael Jackson comes along at the age of 11. An amazing sound he had. Remember ABC and I Found That Girl? This was released by Motown Records in late 1971. Sold about 6 million copies. But what an amazing album. It was like the first time I kind of owned this and I just loved it. So there you go. Number one, Jackson 5 Greatest Hits from 1971. Number two, I was 10 years old when this album came out. And there's only going to be one word to describe it. Bruce. Remember The Boss? Maybe that wasn't too good, but how many concerts have I been to see Bruce Springsteen? Bruce Springsteen in 1973, it was debut album, Greetings from Asbury Park. I mean, that album to me, it came out January 5th, 1973. Here's what's interesting, his folk rock, remember when Bruce hit the scene? That album only sold 25,000 copies in the first year. That's incredible. Okay, Blinded by the Light. I listen to that song probably every other day in my mix. And then Spirit in the Night. I mean, there were some amazing songs on that. I mean, Bruce has put out, Bruce is one of my favorites of all time. But you know, Bruce, that's the one I got to put in the top 10. And by the way, folks, I didn't put more than one per artist. Bruce has put The River, Born to Run. There's a lot of great albums out there. But I got to go with Greetings from Asbury Park. Kind of rocked my world at the age of 10. Another person that rocked my world. Well, I was listening to him a little earlier than 1974, Elton John's Greatest Hits. By the way, I have a couple of these Greatest Hits on there because I can't help it. I mean, I remember this album. It was the first album of the Greatest Hits. It came out in, like I said, 1974. I was an 11-year-old boy, but he actually, Elton John recorded the songs on this from 1970 to 1974. It came out in November of that year. It sold 16 million copies. Remember Rocket Man and Your Song? Your Song's probably one of my favorite songs, and it's actually Elton John's best-selling album of all time. So there you go. To the Rocket Man, we're going to go with my fourth choice. You guys are going to like this one, and don't laugh at me here because, hey, I have to do it. I was 14 years old when this came out in 1977. All right, this is Meatloaf's Bat Outta Hell. I mean, pure rock. This sold, check it out, 43 million copies. It's Meatloaf's second album. I mean, my favorite song, you remember, well, I'm going to tell you this, because I was a big Yankee fan. My father used to take us to Yankee Stadium, and the 14-year-old boy, big baseball player, Phil Rizzuto, the voice of the Yankees, is on that track, Paradise by the Dashboard Light. You got to love that. You got to love Phil coming around home plate. And my favorite song on that album is Heaven Can Wait. I mean, everybody knows Two Out of Three ain't bad, but Heaven Can Wait was just an awesome, awesome song. So, hey, you know, Meatloaf, and he's still going. He's out there doing concerts, I think. There you go. Okay, number five. All right, this woman, of course, I fell in love with this woman. I write about her in my memoir. If you want to read about that, Simply Between Millions from Wall Street to Hollywood, check it out. Also on the website, Amazon. Did that in an audiobook, too, by the way. Madonna. Madonna's first album, debut album. Remember her? She was the post-disco dance pop queen. Madonna, I mean, Holiday, Lucky Star. I mean, every song, Physical Attraction. That came out July 27th, 1983. And I remember she was interviewed by Dick Clark on Bandstand. She performed Holiday. And I clearly, everybody knows this, she said, "I want to rule the world." Well, Maddie, Madonna, you did rule the world, and I love you for it because you're tremendous, without a doubt. Changed my world, and she's made so many great songs after that. Live to Tell, I mean, there's some amazing ones, but I got to put that from 1983. This came out, I was 20 years old, and you'll read about that hanging down on South Street when I first heard her, the song Everybody. Awesome, awesome. Number six, let's move right into it. Now, this guy, without a doubt, Bob Marley and the Wailers. I mean, unbelievable. 25 million copies of this legend by Island Records. It's a compilation album. It was released on May 8th of 1984. I was 21 years old. This is the best-selling reggae album of all time, without a doubt. I play these in my yoga class. Redemption Song, Waiting in Vain, I Shot the Sheriff. I mean, come on. Marley is the man. Without a doubt, you got to put Marley in the top 10. I have to. And it was about that time, you know, hanging out at Penn, cruising downtown. Marley with a big guy. Well, we won't even talk about what the hell he usually does, but what an amazing album. All right, number seven, arguably one of my favorite albums. I'm going to put this at number one. I have to say, I'm going to put this one at number one. The Glammy Goth Rock was released on May 2nd, 1989. I was 26 years old. It changed my world. Robert Smith and The Cure. You know The Cure, Disintegration. What an album. It was his eighth studio album. And this came about when Robert Smith, I've read this, he was 29, going on to be 30, he's depressed. I mean, there's all sorts of things. You'll read all about it. But this guy, I mean, that album to me, every single song on that, my favorite song, without a doubt, on that album is Homesick. I mean, amazing album. I play that probably every day. I'm listening to him. I love Robert Smith, man. That sold 3 million copies, but he definitely rocked my world with that album. Now, you know, at that age, 26, I'm in the party scene making money. I think I was working at Goldman Sachs. Then I went on to work, went to California here, to second stint in L.A. to work for Drexel Burnham. So I remember that. That was at a very unique time. Good. Number eight. Now, Madonna, I think, you know, I love Madonna, but this woman, I have to admit, she's probably my favorite female artist of all time. No doubt. My favorite female artist, and I'll tell you a little story here. Who are we talking about? Natalie Merchant, 10,000 Maniacs, Blind Man Zoo. I mean, no kidding. I don't know what to say. All I know is that album came out May 16th, 1989. Hateful Hate, Dust Bowl. It was their fourth album. But let me tell you a little story what changed my world with Natalie Merchant. Beautiful woman. I remember this, and I'm going to quote you from her. This is what she wrote. She said, quote, "It's funny. I remember doing the Johnny Carson show and I couldn't afford my rent." No doubt. When I saw her on Johnny Carson, I think it was after her album In My Tribe, right? She did Peace Train and Don't Talk. I think it was December 4th, 1987. She was this, like, I don't know. She was this, like, this beautiful barefoot gal jumping around in a sundress. And I'm like, what the hell? And Johnny Carson at the time, I think he's looking at her and she's bouncing all over the stage. And it was incredible. She was pure. And, you know, they named 10,000 Maniacs. There's a movie called 2,000 Maniacs. It was a slasher film. That's how they named the band after that. So Natalie Merchant, I love you. I've loved you since, you know, since that. I've followed your music. I mean, that I got to put in the top 10 because when that came out, wow, that was, I was, you know, 26 years old. Interestingly enough, that album came out, what, 14 days, exactly 2 weeks after The Cure. So in the same month, 2 weeks apart, The Cure, Disintegration, 10,000 Maniacs, Blind Man Zoo, two albums that kind of rocked it for me. Fell in love with this gal for sure. And she's still out there rocking it with her music. Love it. All right, number nine, and I'm going to read you. Okay, this is probably arguably my favorite song of all time. I'm going to read you a line from this song, and then you're going to tell me who we're talking about here. I'm sure my buddy Chris Duque is in the other room. He knows who this is, right? Remember this? "I know someday you'll have a beautiful life. I know you'll be a sun in somebody else's sky. But why can't it be mine?" Eddie Vedder. Pearl Jam's Black. I mean, that's got to be the best line ever, one of the best songs ever. I could listen to that song 52 times in a row. I remember my mother used to listen to Ain't No Mountain High Enough for so many times in a row. But Pearl Jam's 10. And what's cool about Pearl Jam, I mean, I was 28 years old. I was 28 years old. It was in 1991 that this album came out. It came out August 27th, 1991. And by the way, a friend of mine went to see him in Philadelphia at the Trocadero. Anybody's been to Philly back in the 90s when Eddie Vedder was climbing around the second level and he dove back into the crowd. He total whack job, this guy. I mean, whack in a good way. It's a debut album. If you recall, Pearl Jam, the name of the band was called Mookie Blaylock. So they changed it to Pearl Jam. It's the, you know, grunge era, right? Sold 10 million copies. But here's what's interesting. Eddie Vedder didn't appear on the scene, kind of joined the band, it says, on October 13th, 1990. He was in San Diego, and then they were in Seattle, and they sent him a tape, and he made some lyrics, and he flew him up, and boom, it gelled. And that's an amazing album. I mean, everybody should have that in their collection. Pearl Jam's 10 for number 9. All right, so let's get into what's my final choice here. What's number 10? I was 29 years old, 3 months shy of my 30th birthday, and I hear this, okay? Well, let me just say two words. If anybody knows two words, these nuts. Who knows Snoop Dogg? And Dr. Dre is the Chronic, right? Let Me Ride. By the way, Dre, that song, Let Me Ride, is my favorite song on that album. Amazing album. That's after he left N.W.A. Dr. Dre left N.W.A. This came out on December 15th, 1992. It was his West Coast hip-hop, gangster rap, G-funk sound. I mean, awesome, awesome album. I mean, that album to me is, well, that's probably one of the best rap albums of all time. I mean, I kind of started getting into it then, but Dre, love your work. Congrats on the beats and the billionaire, you know, all that business. But here you go, folks. My top 10, Jackson 5, Greatest Hits, Bruce Springsteen, Greetings from Asbury Park, Elton John, Greatest Hits, Meatloaf, Bad Outta Hell, Madonna, Bob Marley and the Wailers, Legend, The Cure, Disintegration, 10,000 Maniacs, Blind Man Zoo, Pearl Jam, 10, and Dr. Dre, The Chronic. What a group of albums. I hope you got those in your... I hope you got those in your arsenal like I do, because music is awesome. That's why Chris Duquet is here to play a song for us, because I love music. It jazzes you up. It inspires you. And hey, if you need to go to a place, you get down on yourself, go to your favorite, you know, go to your favorite musicians, go to your favorite songs. And then from that note, we're going to move into the health and fitness tip of the day. And Chris is going to be in here any minute. But health and fitness tip of the day, I have to thank WebMD and a medical doctor, Janet Wolf, who's a clinical psychologist in New York City, came up with these. So here we go. 3 easy steps to breaking bad habits, right? We talked about the obesity and bad habits. Well, here we go. Number 1, make it conscious. Figure out when and why you're doing it, right? Stress, frustrated, angry, because that's most important. You got to be aware of it. It's creating an awareness. So first you create the awareness. You got to make it conscious, because before you're aware of it, you can't do anything about it. Hey, Chris just came in the studio. He's going to get set up here. And then number 2, put it in writing so it really sinks in, okay? No doubt, because there's emotion surrounding habit. Okay, and what goes through your head when you do the bad habit? And we're not talking just food here, people. We're talking about cracking your knuckles, and we're talking about biting your nails. I mean, whatever it is that you're doing that's a bad habit, you got to get rid of bad habits. Anybody can get rid of bad habits. So if you put it in writing, it kind of circles back to making it conscious. Making it conscious, that's what this is all about. Number 3 is the bait and switch. What does that mean? Everybody knows the bait and switch. Once you realize it, biting your nails, cracking your knuckles, eating when it's not mealtime, you got to find a temporary or permanent replacement for it. Like walking a mile, doing your sit-ups, your push-ups, your pull-ups, whatever it is that you could do. Meditate, you know, drink coffee, drink water. And if all else fails, get that rubber band around your wrist and start slapping your... Start slapping yourself. And on that note, Chris Duquet, welcome, Chris.
What's up, Mr. Rich Tola?
What do you say, my man,
Chris? Oh, man, feeling good today. It's a beautiful day. I'm alive. You're alive. I get to hang out with my buddy here on the radio. It's awesome, man. Life is good.
This guy, let me tell you, I met Chris about 2 years ago now. We actually bartended together. Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about that in a second. But this guy's got amazing energy. He's this, all I could say is when you hear him, he's got an awesome voice. He brought me up once to play harmonica. You know, I was hacking away. But let me get started, Chris, by talking about lucid dream, because you're a lucid dreamer.
I am. I've been been practicing lucid dreaming for, since 2008. It was introduced to me through a movie that I saw by a guy named Richard Linklater, a movie called Waking Life. He's a wonderful producer, director. He has amazing movies, A Scanner Darkly. And I recommend A Waking Life for everybody. It dives into things like quantum mechanics, physics, politics, religion, spirituality, and lucid dreaming. My whole life, I've had amazing dreams since I was a little kid. You know, everybody dreams of like maybe flying every once in a while, but my dreams were just dragons and monsters and all kinds of superheroes and everything that you can imagine that that a kid's imagination could stretch to. And I loved it. And then I was introduced to this, and it introduced me to the fact that you can control your dreams. You can actually, right, like, wake up in your dream world, know you're dreaming, know that you're not with your body. Your body is actually sleeping in bed, and you're aware of this. But somehow you look at yourself, and you become aware of yourself, and you teach yourself to hang on to that awareness. Because some people, it accidentally happens to. They'll become aware that they're dreaming, and they'll either forget shortly after, or they'll wake up from the excitement of it. And I've trained my mind to basically... through journaling, of course. Journaling is the number one thing you have to do, but I've trained my mind to hang on to that awareness and observe that world with continued awareness. Observe the body that you're using. Know that it's not your physical body. Know that if you touch your arm in your dream world, you feel it, but there's no nerves tracing that to your brain. There's no nerves telling you that you've been touched. You're experiencing light. You're experiencing matter, but there's no matter. There's no photons. So to really become immersed in this world and to observe it as a scientist, as an observer, which you are the observer. We're playing roles here, you know, and it changes the way you see everything, Rich. It changes the way you look at yourself, how you feel about yourself. Lucid dreaming can be used to tackle things like depression, anxiety, insecurities. Man, you taste the part of yourself that isn't yourself. And I think a lot of people think the all of them is this physical form when, man, it's so much bigger. It's so much more divine.
I hope you're not dreaming now, but let me give a definition here, because for those of you who aren't as familiar with lucid dreaming, let me give you a definition from Wikipedia. Okay, Wikipedia says, a lucid dream is any dream in which one is aware that one is dreaming, okay? In relation to this phenomena, the Greek philosopher Aristotle observed, often, when one is asleep, there is something in consciousness which declares that what then presents itself is but a dream, okay? And going a little further, okay, talk about it. Where did the phrase come from? Who coined the phrase? This was a Dutch psychiatrist and writer, Frederik van Eeden. Okay, he died in the 1930s, 1932, but he basically says you manipulate your imagination to experience you're experiencing in the dream environment. Okay, lucid dreams are realistic and vivid. Chris is mentioning that right away. And he said in the activity is in the parietal lobe. It's the sensory lobe of your brain. You know your brain has four major lobes? Well, this is the one where it's making it a conscious process. And what I think about, Chris, is you said the movie Linklater, but I think of Christopher Nolan's Inception, right, from 2010. Mm-hmm. Remember that with Leonardo DiCaprio, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Ellen Page? I mean, that was kind of sharing dreams. So to talk more about it, I mean, you say, I mean, it kind of changes your life. I mean, how get a little bit more into that.
Well, it changes your life in a way that, like I said, you taste the part of yourself that isn't what you're used to associating you with. You know, most people say, okay, you say, who are you? And they give you their, and this is going to sound weird, but they give you their human name. You know, they give you who they are as a human being. And then you ask them again, you know, really look at it and be like, no, who are you? And that'll usually maybe stump a lot of people, and they'll be like, well, I just told you. I know you told me what you've been called upon your arrival here, but who are you really? Really explore your consciousness. You know, there's so many things that science can break apart. You could take any particle and break it down to the atom, you know, but you can't really discover what consciousness is. There's nothing that really kind of lets us know. It's all theory. Years and hundreds and thousands of years, we've been, you know, trying to discover what we are, who we are, why we are. And when you dive within yourself, which even this physical world is experienced from within. You know, light has to go into your eyes, your brain grabs the memory of what you're looking at. It all happens so fast. You touch somebody's arm, they don't feel it until it goes into their brain, and their brain tells them you're being touched on the arm, and they feel it inside. So everything is experienced from within. So to really just immerse yourself in this world and really become curious again, like a child, you know, never lose your curiosity. You start to explore yourself from within. And I started doing that with my dreams, waking up little by little and eventually being able to retain my consciousness. When I first started journaling, which is really important when it comes to lucid dreaming, I would write like a quarter of a page or something. You know, most people don't remember much detail of their dreams, but the more you kind of practice, just like, you know, you practice anything, you become better at it. You start to remember more detail. They become more vivid. They become more real. Now I have a dream and I can write 10 to 15 pages worth of details. I mean, there was a cup on the coffee table. It was the color red. There was a door there and a door next to it. The guy walked in, took 10 steps. I mean, you start living two lives, essentially. And with lucid dreaming, because you're journaling your dreams, by the end of your life, man, you're going to have way more experiences, way more life memories than the average person, and know so much more about yourself, know so much more about other people, because you look at others and you start to see that you are them and they are you, and we're all connected. You mentioned earlier, I was listening about, like, you know, racism still going on, and get your shit together, and, you know, everybody just respecting each other, man. And I think people don't respect each other and they treat each other with hate because they've forgotten who that person is in correlation to them, in conjunction with them. They've forgotten that that person is them. You treat somebody else with anger, you treat somebody else with hate, you're treating yourself. You hit somebody else, you hit yourself, man. And we're all a family. And I don't know. I don't know why the whole world doesn't see it yet. I don't know why we still, you know, have wars and there's racism that still exists and all this ignorance. And I don't know why. I think it's
because they're not aware and they're afraid. I mean, you get a lot of people that are afraid. And how do they act out? They go to this, you know, homeostasis is what they're used to. They want to fight. Yeah. You know, did you ever meet someone? I remember New York City. You know, you're on the subway and you don't even want to make eye contact with people because sometimes you think this guy's just going to come up and punch you in the face because he's just like, he's not aware. He's not aware of the humans that are around him. He's not respecting himself. Mm-hmm. He's not respecting others. But talk about this journaling, because I did read that that's a great way to keep coaching yourself. But do you do that? So you sleep, what, 6-8 hours and you wake up and you journal?
Yeah, I wake up and I journal. There's certain things that I do sometimes too. I'll set an alarm. I read a book called Exploring the World of Lucid Dreaming by Stephen LaBarge. Mm-hmm. And wonderful book. Basically, for me, it's like the Bible of lucid dreaming. And it showed me different techniques. And sometimes I'll set an alarm 2 hours before I hit my 8 hours if I am going to sleep an 8-hour night. And what happens at 6 hours is usually you, at that time, you go into REM sleep. And REM sleep is when your most vivid of dreams happen. It's when your body's pretty much recharged and you're just dreaming. Your body just gives you movies to watch, you know. And with journaling, you're instructing your brain to remember more detail. Your brain doesn't know to do that on its own. You have to kind of instruct it to do that. Your brain gathers and remembers things that I think are going to protect you, you know, are going to protect you in the physical world. So that's why people forget their dreams, you know, so often. It's just, they don't need to remember them, you know. You have to really become curious again. And with journaling, it has really just trained me to really just dive deeper and deeper and deeper into that dream world, remember more detail. And since I've been journaling, man, Rich, I've seen Jupiter up close. I've seen stars up close. I've visited other planets. I once saw the death of a planet. I've ridden on Falcor from The Neverending Story 3 times. I've ridden on dragons. I fought dragons. I've fought monsters and then made friends with them afterwards. Zombie apocalypse. The other night I had a gopher apocalypse dream. We were slaughtering gophers all over the place. They were just killer gophers coming from everywhere. Countless flying dreams. And what's interesting about flying is the more people I talk to about lucid dreaming, the more I figure out that not a lot of people fly in their dreams. I've met people that have never flown before. And like flying in a dream, usually I hear like, oh yeah, I've flown, but you know, it's, you start swim flying or you're floating, or most people can't really just take off like Neo from the Matrix, you know? But that also takes practice. also takes a lot of practice. Just like a child needs to fall 1,000 times before it takes its first steps, everything that you practice, you become better at, and flying is no exception. You fly and you practice that, and you practice that through your dreams, and if you start lucid dreaming, you're aware that you're practicing it. Oh my gosh, man, the ground breaks apart with the force that you leave, and flying over the ocean and the waves like just part for you. It is your own inner universe to do whatever you want, whatever your imagination can conjure up. It's the most wonderful thing for me. And this book really that I'm going to be writing, I'm taking a trip to Mexico pretty soon to just take some time off and hang out over there and get all my journals in order and put them into book form. But man, I really think it can awaken some people's minds to
a book about your experiences. And by the way, I want to ask you this, because a lot of people have dreams. I mean, these dreams, to me, that's like Avatar. You're dreaming, mm-hmm. you're flying, you're mm-hmm. doing this, that, and the other. But what about the concept of dreams that sort of predict the future? Do these dreams at all whatsoever, do you ever wake up and like all of a sudden you're standing on a corner and maybe you were at that corner, maybe if you were flying 6,000 feet above looking down at that corner? Mm-hmm. Or no, because that's a whole nother sort of avenue, right?
That is. Predicting the future, man, I've had apocalyptic dreams that you could wake up and say, you know, okay, maybe that's a sign or maybe that's something. I've even had people that said they have dreams and then something similar happened later on. And I think, you know, and this is just my theory from my own explorations and the books that I've read, but I think internally, when you really venture inside, you're connected to all the information ever. Anything that is ever in existence, you're connected to it. And there's ways to access that, which like say maybe deja vu is something like you've done something in another life, maybe. I mean, everybody has mm-hmm. their theories for mm-hmm. deja vu, but you have done something in this life that maybe almost same steps connects to something you did in another life and it feels familiar, or you connect with a wavelength of another person's mind and they've done it. And because we're all connected, you maybe feel like you've done it, or who knows what, you know, what deja vu is.
All the self-help people talk about tapping into the power of positive, right? The power mm-hmm. of positive attraction, how the wavelengths are already out there. I mean, mm-hmm. you read the books, The Secret, The Answer, all that yep. stuff. I mean, yep. if you guys read that, I've read all that, Eckhart Tolle. I mean, the books that are out there are saying it's in the universe. You could tap into abundance. And mm-hmm. what a lot of people do is they're not rewarding themselves with abundance, so they don't believe that they're capable of it. That's a yeah. whole separate thing. But so you're going to Mexico. Now, wait, before we do that, let's talk, because I want to have you play in a couple more minutes yeah. here, but let's talk about this trip where, so recently Chris went away to meditation. He didn't yeah. speak, right? A friend of mine did it for 30 days, which I know is quite some time, but basically tell us about how, what is it, 10 days that you went without communicating in verbal form?
So I love to meditate. Meditation is one of my things. There's all kinds of forms of meditation, from still meditation, silent meditation, observational meditation, sensory meditation, and I stumbled upon something called Vipassana. Vipassana, it means to see things as they really are. And there's a center in 29 Palms called Southern California Vipassana Center. And I signed up for it and I was interested in it. And basically it's 10 days of complete silence. You arrive, they give you the orientation, and then you just go silent for 10 days. You cannot talk. You wake up 4 a.m., you meditate all day with the exception of an hour for breakfast, an hour for lunch. You could shower and use the restroom, but they have group meditations alone, and it's 10 days of silence. You can speak if you have a question for a teacher, but even then you want to speak really low, you know. But I spoke one time, and I went with a buddy of mine, and you know, it was amazing, Rich. The most vivid dreams. You almost double up your awareness, and you just become ever more curious. The older I get, the more curious I become. And with meditation, it's an inward journey. If you want to find out anything about who you are, how to treat others, how to treat yourself and fall in love with yourself, that's the key. When you really fall in love with yourself and you find this, I don't even want to say the word God, because I do believe in God, but I do think, you know, people associate that word with specific gods, you know? Mm-hmm. When you find really the source of who you are, man, do you really fall in love with yourself? You see yourself as your child. You are your very first child. How would you treat your child? With unconditional love or with hatred? When you love your child grows up and starts loving other people. That's how I really, you know, have found that meditation and Vipassana has done for me. It's awoken me to all the subatomic particles. I look at a wall now, and I don't just see a wall. I see bacteria. I see subatomic particles. I see atoms. I see energy. I feel it. I feel plants. You feel people around you. And man, do I treat them with love. And it's kind of a hippie mentality, but I would hug a tree. I would, you know, I'd love a bird to land on. I do, man.
This guy, you walk down the street, he sees you from a mile away. He's a big guy here. He gives you the bear hug. So basically, this 10 days, it sounds like it's the ultimate in A, self-love, B, decluttering your mind.
Oh, yeah.
And C, really getting in touch with other human beings because you're feeling their energy. But I got one question for you. Is there a gym there?
No gym.
I'm not going.
No, I know you, Rich. No, there's a trail. And believe me, I was the only one doing this. But everybody would walk around the trail so still. And so, but man, I have so much energy because I pull my energy from my endless source. And I would go on that trail and I'd like power walk around. There was rocks on the ground. So I would like put socks on my hands and I'd get down and do like 50 push-ups. I'd walk around, do another 50. I was doing like 300 push-ups every day while I was there. And I noticed people kind of looking at me because people go there when usually they're depressed and, you know, they have things in their life or they're trying to. I met one guy at the end that was addicted to meth and he was going there to try to, you know, cut his addiction to meth.
Well, 10 days without meth, I'm sure he did quite well.
There's a lot of people there with a lot of issues, you know, and here I am just bubbly as can be. And even my buddy was like, man, I'd look at you and I'd almost get angry because I'd be dealing with all this shit and you'd be so happy and smiling walking around the trail and waving your arms in the air. I just, man, I'm so excited to be here. Yeah. I know that one day I have to leave this earth and I'm trying to leave as much as I can, as much love and give everything. Everything that I have. I want nothing when I leave. I want to give everything, man. And I think if the whole world gave what they have to the whole world would be taken care of. So,
well, without a doubt. And all I know is this. If you're folks out listening out there, you're thinking to yourself, there's no way in a million years that this guy could go 10 days without speaking, right? I find it hard to believe myself, but I'm sure you were out in the woods somewhere talking to some tree. So anyway, no. On that note, Chris, we got about 10 minutes left, but I want to play a song because Chris also is a very talented musician.
Thank
and he
you,
plays
sir.
A lot of charities. That's what, hey, talk about the self-love and giving love. This guy, just being around him. And by the way, we did bartend together. He was the best, without a doubt. He was the best. I think I was the second best out of that group.
I think we were equal, man. You and I put off the same wavelengths, I think. You're absolutely amazing, man. I love your heart. I love your face.
Well,
I love your mind.
Thank you very much.
Your energy. Everything about you is wonderful,
people.
Man.
No, thank you. Thank you. No, we had some good times. We worked out at the Hollywood. Remember the park over there?
Yep,
Chris was
yep.
always, this guy's got the energy.
You kicked my ass, man.
Of course.
You're
of
a
course.
Beast. You are a beast.
That's the way it goes. I mean, you got to keep it real. So, Chris, what are we playing today? I want to hear that. I mean, I love your music. I actually play him as well, folks, in my classes. So, what do you got going? Whips out the acoustic guitar.
In light of what we're talking about, I wrote a song a few years ago about being happy. And it's basically a song about just being happy, I guess. It's not needing anything to be happy and looking at yourself and appreciating yourself and respecting yourself and falling head over heels in love with yourself and finding happiness. There's nothing you need to be happy. Most people, you know, say, well, this makes me so happy, or I need this and then I'll be so happy. Or I get my new car, man, I'll be so happy. And it's like, no, man, you're you. You just choose happiness. You can, if you, somebody came and robbed you of everything that you have, you could still be happy. There's the difference between
a
man that loses his legs and is depressed for the rest of his life, and there's a man that loses his legs and does seminars for people and plays amazing wheelchair basketball and has fun with the rest of his life and doesn't need anything to make him happy. So the song I'm going to be playing is called Happily, and it's a song about being happy, and I hope it makes you happy, and I hope you have good feelings, and I hope you share those feelings.
Here we go, folks. Chris Duque.
So your thing is scattered in something that scattered in nothing. Oh, will you hang? And you write, you're writing your story of all of your glory. I believe that some of us sing, we can't help but remain well outside the box. So we just look up, we see the stars where they're shaking, and all those galaxies, they're breaking up away from us. Oh, now I had a dream that one day we would see that life and being free, it meant living happily. And I had a dream that I flew past mountain peaks. Yeah, and oh, can you believe that everybody is in living happily? The time is on our hand, and all those numbers understand. You think they understand everything, so we keep on keeping it, keep on, we're keeping it low key. That's what they want you to think, yeah. But I'm finding out for me. Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, 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 oh. Oh, now I had a dream that one day we would see that life and being free, it meant living happily. And I had a dream that I flew past mountain peaks. Oh, and oh, can you believe that everybody isn't living? Can you believe that everybody isn't living happily?
Oh, good stuff. I mean, it's just the theme with our dreaming, right? Mountain peaks. I mean, hey, folks, this guy, you got to check him out on Facebook. Facebook, Chris Duque, it's D-U-Q-U-E. Just check him out. I mean, and especially when you're doing another charity, you're up there. He's out beaming with energy. You're out the love, man, the time.
All the time, every day. You can wake me up at 4 a.m., and I will have a hug for you, and I will kiss you on the cheek and tell you I love you and tell you to love you. Also, Instagram, Chris_Duque. If you want to go listen to some of my music, go to SoundCloud.com. I have some stuff on there. I sing with a hip-hop group called The Immortal Outfit. I play with various amazing musicians. There's acoustic stuff, band stuff, hip-hop stuff on there. I have a website coming out pretty soon that I'm working on. Probably after I finish the book, I'm going to try to put everything on there and really, you know, network through there. But
2015, man. He's out there, folks. He's out there. Check him out. A lot of great energy. Any chance you get to see him, you will. But, Chris, we do this every show. I mean, we're going to jump ahead here to the
fast five, and then we'll wrap it up.
Yeah,
I do a fast
do
five. Five quick questions.
Okay.
You're going to do A or B. You know, it's pretty straightforward. Tell us a little bit about your personality. You know, nothing too challenging.
My personality, I would have to say, man, it's big. Big is the right word, I guess.
Big is the right word.
I walk into a room just because I love having energy. I love drinking water. You know, I got a little meat on me, but I handle it well. You know,
it's all good,
I can still
man.
Do flips and run, and I just love having energy because I love sharing things
you
with
send
people.
It out.
And when you share that energy with people, it's followed by love, or love is the first outcome. Whatever, man. But
without
I'd say the best word to describe my energy is big and loving.
Big and loving.
Yeah,
you got it. So on that big and loving note, let's do it. Number one. No, he really is. Chocolate or vanilla ice cream?
Oh, man, vanilla, please.
No kidding.
Oh, my
you're
God.
The first one would go with
really?
Vanilla. No kidding.
Have you only had girls on the show?
No,
no.
We've had a couple guys, girl. Whoa. Wow.
I love me some vanilla, man. Throw some peanut butter in. The vanilla, I feel like you could do more with than chocolate. Maybe just because I love vanilla. Throw some peanut butter, some honey on top of that. Vanilla ice cream all
look
the way.
Look at that. The loving man with the vanilla. All right, number two. I think I know this one. Tropical island or New York City?
Woo, tropical
of
island.
Of course.
Of course. You
He's
know
got
that.
The guitar. All you need
man.
Is a guitar. You don't even need a loincloth,
nope.
I'm sure.
I'd be out there by myself, and I'd have the most fun in the world.
Right, you'd just be talking to the trees, I'm sure.
And they'd be talking back,
I'm
my
sure
friend.
I'm sure they will. You get the tree hugger here. here we go. Number three. Ancient Rome or the Wild West?
Ooh, man. That's a tough one.
I know what you're going to say here.
Gosh.
I know what you're going to say.
Do here. You?
I know what you're going to
okay,
say.
Okay, hold on. Let me pick one. Let me see. I think I got one. What do you think I was
going
to say?
I think you're going with Ancient Rome.
Oh, my God. I was going with the Wild West.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Really?
It's a tough one, though. I can understand why you would go for that.
I thought you'd be into, like, the loving and the big, food. They eat a lot. The Wild West, I don't think you want to be shooting people.
Yeah, maybe Ancient Rome. You kind of changed my mind.
I changed your mind. You're too loving. Yeah.
I'm sure there's beautiful, beautiful women in Ancient Rome, too. I'm sure there's beautiful women in the Wild West.
I could see it. You're walking around with the toga.
I
can see it. All right, here we go. Number four, tearjerker or action thriller?
Whew. I'd have to go with action thriller. As far you're talking about movies, right?
Hey, tearjerker, action.
I watch movies to give me ideas for dreaming. I watch Transformers so I can go dream about the Transformers. I'll go see Ninja Turtles or outer space movies so I can dream about outer space. So I'd have to go action thriller.
Cool. Last one, candlelight dinner or picnic in the park?
Picnic in the park.
Oh,
definitely.
Of course. You got
out
the
in
guitar,
nature,
man. Trees.
Always, always.
That's awesome. Well, Chris, thanks so much for coming in. We had a great time with Chris Duque.
Rich,
give
I love
quick
you so
shout
much,
out
buddy.
To somebody, yeah. Family. What a-
I want to give a shout out to my mother, my brother Jonathan, the Immortal Outfit, my buddy Scott, my buddy Danny, my dad in Mexico. I'll see you soon. I want to give a shout out to you, Mr. Rich Tola. You mean the world
Thank
to
you.
Me, man. I love
Thank
you so much. And anybody listening to this, know that I don't have to know you to love you. And I hope you carry the same perspective with you. Don't really need to know anybody to share love with them. Share a smile, share a hug, share love all the time. So
you
love
got
you guys.
It. Share love. That's advice from my man, Chris Duque. So there you go, folks. That's our show for today. So, hey, tune in tomorrow. We got Wellness Wednesday. So take a look. We have Tom and Tony Pawlucki coming in here with some good vibes, good wellness vibes. We're going to have a great show for that. So, and if you want to check me out again, it's richtola.com. And, hey, I'm Rich Tola. And remember, dreams do come true, but hey, what do I know?
You're listening to Tola Talks with Rich Tola, right here on LA Talk Radio.